You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel?
This is dedicated to Montana Man. He likes this song.
I wonder where you are.
The Goo Goo Dolls.
I want to wake up where you are.
It's called Fly.
I won't say anything at all. So why don't you fly?
And joining me, as he rarely does these days, is Michael Musselman. How you feeling, man?
I'm feeling okay. Feeling better. Every day I feel a little bit better.
We like that. We like that. What percentage are you back to full duty? Are you 50%, 75%? Talk to me.
I don't know. Can't put a percentage on it. I mean, I always feel better than yesterday's.
All right. Well, that's what counts. That's what counts. Do you require any special treatment when you don't feel well?
No.
No?
Just try and do the same thing that I normally do. In moderation.
So you're out and about doing all the activities of daily life, as they say, in the long term care business?
Yes, sir.
Wow. So what'd you do over the weekend? How was your weekend?
Weekend went fast. I don't know what I did.
You don't know what you did? I did I fixed a whole bunch of stuff yesterday. I had a family sign painted. It says the McNamara's on it. I had it carved in the Philippines in 1987 when I was going through there on the USS Ranger. And it had fallen in disrepair. And years ago, I had sanded it and restained it and refinished it. But the lettering had to be repainted. And there'd been a couple of different attempts at it. And so, got after that this weekend. Colleen and I bought the paint. The secret to painting, if you talk to people that do construction, there's a little saying that they have, and it's like measure twice, cut once.
Right.
And in painting, I would say tape twice, paint once. If you want to be good at painting, be good at taping, and that way it looks nice and, you know, you have it done well. So we taped the hell out of it and then painted it, and it turned out awesome. So did that. I took my daughters I've wanted it for the last year, probably longer. In most radio studios, you see microphones that are in like arms. They're called boom arms. And that way you can have the desk in front of you free to write and things like that. Well, I've done most of the broadcasting my life like that, but I don't have one in my studio. So they got me one for my birthday, but it didn't have all the hardware. So found one in the City of Industry. So we went up to the City of Industry. Then we were going to go see the movie Darkest Hour about Winston Churchill. So we were going to do that in Huntington Beach. So we drive, get the boom mic or the mic boom, and then go over to Huntington. But the movie sold out. So we go to lunch at Buffalo Wild Wings. So we have a good time there. Then we go to a second theater, and Mike, we go in, and my daughters were, my oldest daughter Catherine dogged me about going to see another Hitler movie. I said, I've never taken you to see a Hitler movie. She said, Mom did. I said, what movie? She said, Monument Man. I said, that's not a Hitler movie. It's an art movie. So I said, this is about Winston Churchill. And it's supposedly a great movie. I saw that in print the other day. So we go in, and they have more leg room. They have twice as much leg room in this theater as you have in first class on an airplane, which is a lot, right? They have every seat in the theater is a Lazy Boy. And not only is it a Lazy Boy, you hit a button and it fully reclines and the seat and the leg rest kicks up.
Right.
It was awesome. Absolutely awesome. The challenge was not to fall asleep. and which I think I nodded off before the movie started, but saw the movie. It's called The Darkest Hour. So let me give you a quiz. You're the Prime Minister of Great Britain, and your army is surrounded in France, penned in at Dunkirk, and your chief of staff of the army looks at you and says, of the 300,000, we believe we'll be able to get 10% off. We think that you should negotiate with Mussolini to broker a ceasefire.
Dunkirk? Mussolini?
Yeah, Mussolini had made evidently back-channel overtures to the Brits to negotiate a settled peace in which Germany would occupy France. The British Army would be allowed to leave France, or at least a part of it would be allowed to leave France, and they would enter into a negotiated peace with Germany. So what do you think you would have done as a prime minister? Do you think you would have said, no, we'll fight it out?
Yeah, absolutely.
That, I'll tell you what, he was getting lobbied hard by Neville Chamberlain and the Labour Party, saying that this is going to lead to the destruction of the entire British Army. And then what?
Yeah, but so with the negotiated peace, were you? I mean, that's,
yeah.
That no, the option. Okay, so
I'm with you.
Of chance of, yeah. If people will sit there and they say, "Well, this is going to lead to the destruction of the British Army," but that's not a guarantee. But, you know, the fact that me surrendering, that is 100% guarantee of the destruction.
Yeah, but we'll get
them. So, I'm going to go down fighting.
We'll get them back, though, alive. We'll get them back. And then Churchill orders a brigade, I want to say 4,000 British soldiers, that is in Calais, to counterattack the Germans to take pressure off Dunkirk so they can begin the... And they haven't even begun the evacuation. They're just formulating the idea for the evacuation of Dunkirk. But it's not a done deal. They're commencing it. When this decision needs to be made. And it's up to it. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's called Darkest Hour, and it's an awesome movie. But you look at, and then he calls Roosevelt, and Roosevelt offers him nothing. He said, and Churchill presses him, what about the planes that we've already bought, though? And Roosevelt supposedly says, at least in the movie, he says, well, look, you can't come into the United States with trucks, but we can take them to an airfield close to the Canadian border, and if you come across the border with horses and take them across, that would be okay. What?
Right.
Yeah. So
remember, America was practicing isolationism.
Right. No, we'd already been in one war, right? And now less than 30 years later, we're going to go back to Europe to fight again?
Come on. Right. And this is the whole conspiracy theory that the British knew about the December 7th attack, right. The Japanese, and they didn't say anything because they needed America anymore.
Right. Which, you know, again, we were making jokes last month when I was musing about, look, they attack all over the Pacific and nobody notices that the whole army gets on ships in Japan and goes to sea. Hello?
Right.
You know, and which gives credence to the thought that maybe somebody knew and they didn't say anything. Did the Brits know? So, interesting. But the movie's interesting from the standpoint of, you know, we face a similar, not dissimilar situation today where you have people like Barack Obama, Susan Rice, saying that, you know, living with nuclear Iran and living with nuclear North Korea is just something that we have to accept.
Right.
Is that true? Might it not be better, as bloody as it would be, to fight and eliminate a dictator so that he doesn't sell those weapons?
It's the pay now or pay later scenario. Yeah.
Right.
In the end, you're going to have to pay. In the end, you can only kick the can so far. Eventually, you're going to have to do something. And then it may not be on your watch. And that's why those guys kept kicking that can, because they didn't want it to be on their watch.
Right.
And now it's coming to fruition on this guy's watch. And now he's the bad guy. You know, no. We saw this in writing decades ago, and no one did anything about it. And let's say, for instance, it doesn't come to fruition in the next presidential term. You know, then what? Then the next president is going to have to deal with this. You know, the guy, you know, the people that we're talking about are madmen. That, you know, and that's the problem with these people that try and rationalize their behavior and say, well, it's just the fact that you don't understand them. You can't understand crazy. World-leading psychologists that have all interviewed serial killers and all these crazies in prison. And once you start trying to rationalize crazy, you're even crazier.
Michael Musselman waxing eloquent here. No, it is, and it's really the movie. And Churchill's a weird dude. You know, he's drinking bourbon all day, and he's drink champagne for lunch.
That doesn't make him. No, he wasn't drinking bourbon.
What did he drink? Whiskey? I don't even know the what's the difference.
Yeah, he drank Scotch whiskey or something like that, or Irish whiskey. He drank a whiskey. He didn't drink bourbon.
The aren't they the same?
No.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's a different cat. He was involved in the disaster at Gallipoli, which was one of the first amphibious operations. It went horribly
but that was bad intel. A lot of other bad.
Right. A lot of other bad decisions. He's painted with that. And so, so interesting movie. If I would tell you, I would give it max two thumbs up. Go check it out.
I'm going to go see it. Yeah.
To anybody listening. And it's just, there's parallels today between appeasement, so it got me to think a little bit about what would have, life been like if the Brits say, yeah. And supposedly this is interesting, Mike, and I'm going to run this down, but, he's going to where they're going to decide whether they're going to negotiate with Germany. He's already authorized and, you know, will make, speak to the Italians and ask what kind of terms that would be offered. So he's authorized that. And so he's coming back to get the answer to that. And he gets stuck in traffic. And so he gets out, in order not to be late, he gets out of the vehicle and he hops on the underground, which he's never been on. And so he gets on this train and it shows everybody in the car like staring at him, like, what are you doing here? And with that, he begins to speak to people. And then he asks him, if you were me, what would you do? And supposedly people say, never. I would never negotiate. We'll fight. We'll fight in our streets if we have to. And with that, he gets off the subway after speaking to common Londoners going to work. If they're willing to do that, then he has to be. So I don't know how much of that is dramaticalized or whatnot.
Yeah, the whole, from a tactician, a strategist point of view of Dunkirk, and you look at the success of the British. The success of the British was due largely in the fact of the inept German military, meaning Hitler himself, because, you know, they were completely surrounded, completely outgunned, completely outclassed, and Hitler did not want the destruction of England. He saw England as Anglo-Saxon, as, you know, equals in the fact that they were not the undesirable. They weren't the Poles and the people like that. He didn't really have a grudge against England. He had a grudge against France and then the rest of Europe.
In particular, Russia.
Right. England, not so much. Yeah, the Bolsheviks and that whole belief and that, you know, in that belief in the Far East, to him that was, you know, that was, he needed them to go away.
Yeah,
that was the worst thing ever.
The Germans looked
more so than the Jews.
Right, the Germans looked at the Russians as animals.
Yeah. I mean, people, you talk about, you know, Hitler disposed of, you know, over 6 million Jews in concentration camps across Germany. He doubled that number when it came to Russia.
Yeah, you look at Russian estimates are 20 million people lost their lives.
I mean, come on, guys. He salted the earth when he rolled across the Ukrainian steppes. you know. I mean, he held no quarter for those guys. There was no surrender. There's only death.
Yeah, the German fared a lot worse. And he thought that Germany could be, you know, allies with England, that they had much in common. But again, historically, it's very, very interesting, I think, to look at that. And again, not the decision, right. I think, is much easier post Dunkirk because you still have your army.
Right.
Pre Dunkirk. Yeah, and right.
Other thing to remember too is the big beef he had with France was the embarrassment of the signing of the treaty in World War One and the train car. That was all France was doing. France wanted to embarrass and punish Germany to the point where they suffered in the 20s, you know, in their own depression, jobs and food lines. You know, hundreds of thousands of Germans died of starvation due to the fact that, you know, because of the French were so adamant about embarrassing the German army and the German people that it went above and beyond. You know, it wasn't so much the British in World War One. They were just participants.
But it was the terms of the Treaty of Versailles, which they believed inflicted incredible pain on the
German
economy,
public. The Russian business.
Right.
I'll tell you what, as
testimony to that, when you look at the terms at the end of World War II, the Marshall Plan and all of that, 180 out of the way World War One was concluded.
Because you knew that you couldn't. See, the problem, if you look at World War One history, France raped Germany of its resources.
Right.
You know, by taking the Rhineland and all the big areas where all the natural resources lie, and took those away from Germany. I mean, the whole country, the German people suffered. And that's what Hitler was upset about. That was the beef he had.
Interesting. So when you look at what happened to post World War One Germany, if you look at what happened to them economically and the reparations that they paid, and I mean the seeds of World War Two are certainly sowed in the Treaty of Versailles, which was largely driven by the French.
A smart man would read the between the lines and know that this was not going to go away. That eventually, and if it wasn't Hitler, it'd have been somebody else.
You know, what's interesting in the movie though is that moment when you have to decide as the Prime Minister of England with no land army anymore, what you're going to do with your country, your island nation, are we willing to, you know, if the Germans invade us, are we willing to fight them here in England, or should I sue for some foreign peace? And then if he did sue, I mean, Hitler killed, you know, 6 million. I mean, what would that number have been if he would have been had Europe by treaty and whatnot? So it's kind of you sit there and think about that decision, and then Churchill voted out of office in late 1945. The war just ends and he gets the boot and then he comes back into office. I remember as a little guy, when he passed away and his funeral. Was on TV here in the United States. I remember I think it was in the mid 60s, and they had I want to say his body was put on a barge and taken up the Thames River in London and offloaded someplace near Buckingham Palace and taken through the streets and whatnot. But it was very, it was a big, he had a state funeral.
Oh, yeah, that was a big state funeral. Yeah,
big funeral.
And then if you look at also the similarities we're going to draw between Chamberlain and Obama, They're so uniquely, you know, the same in the fact that the same beliefs, the same ideological beliefs in government, where you look at Chamberlain went over, sat down with Hitler, discussed these things, came back to England, you know, and tried to explain to him, hey, this ain't a bad guy. And
you know what, Mike, you don't know this, but I made very, very similar points 2 hours ago when I was talking about seeing the movie. And, you know, there's an editorial written in the Wall Street Journal called "Make Iran Great Again." It's an awesome. It's an opinion piece, not an editorial. It's an opinion piece, and you should read. I'll email it to you. But it says, look, in the cry of the Iranian people saying no to Syria, yes to us, all the money that got freed up by the Obama administration, that deal they made, where did that go? It went to Hezbollah. It went to their nuclear program.
It went to the pockets of our enemies.
Right. It went to the Houthi rebels that are fighting the Saudis. That's where all that stuff went. Barack Obama was a weak man. He's probably a wonderful person, but he was a weak president of the United States. And you can't have right. that job and be weak. You simply cannot. And I made the same points about appeasement to dictators in North Korea, and Susan Rice's comment about, well, I guess we have to learn to live with a nuclear North Korea. The world can't take North Korea exporting that so that everybody's got them.
Right. We are capable. The problem becomes is America's capable of preventing that. So, thus, people say, well, that's not our responsibility. It is our responsibility. If you're capable of intervening and stopping this crazy madman, then you need to do it. It comes with the territory of being who we are and what we stand for.
You know, and again, what would the Obama administration say about who we are and what we stand for? Are we something special?
Yeah.
I think they would say no.
No, Obama, we're
just another nation.
That administration under that guy, you know, again, went across the world and apologized for our globalization and our capitalism and making us so great, you know, at other people's expenses. Countries do that all the time. That's how their people become good, and that's how their people get the things that they need. Is not by being idle and standing on the sidelines and watching things go by, but getting involved and being active. It's a huge responsibility, and it's part of our responsibility. You know, and that's why I was always a belief of, you know, when Trump first came on hey, we can do this together. You know, we can pool our resources and fight this thing together. You know, Russia, Putin, the muscle, and then we're the intellect, you know, meaning we're probably just as strong, if not stronger, but we're not willing to do that in the eyes of the world eyes. Russia doesn't care. It will go and stomp out its problem before it becomes an issue.
Mike, do you, I think there's a danger in the United States in that I don't know that most of our citizens understand the role that we play globally. I think, you know, more and more, because we don't study such things and whatnot, I don't think most Americans understand the role that we do play in the world in terms of, you know, we're a beacon of freedom. And I, in fact, I got into, after the movie, my daughters and I were talking, and we were talking about that. I said, you know, most Americans don't get the position that we occupy in the world. I said, there's nobody that offers, you know, where does everybody want to go? To Iran? To China? To Russia? No, they all want to come to the United States. Why? Because of opportunity, because of freedom. And what have we done in Iraq? You know, we went to war there. Yeah, we toppled the government, but we've done it all to give it all back to them. Who does that? Nobody does that in the history of the world. The Romans conquered and created the Roman Empire, right? The Brits conquered and stayed. The United States doesn't do that.
The Brits colonized.
Yeah, we don't do that. And there's never been a country like ours that will come and fight and then turn your country back to you so that you can turn into, you know, a strong, free nation. Oh. That's all that we ask. And so it was very interesting talking to my daughters about that. And both of them said the same thing
And not to mention,
never really
come back if things start going south and re-intervene. and to make sure that you don't go south. You know, after we do pull out and we realize, you know what, that was a mistake, we left too early, we come back. You know, written guarantees. We'll make this work.
Michael Musselman, so, Michael Musselman, my guest. Yeah, I think it's what's dangerous is Americans don't study history anymore, and so when we do face events, you know, it's almost like what Churchill faced. It's exactly like, what's expedient, what's easy. Let's do that. And I don't know that it takes the nation into good. I don't know, not only the nation, but it doesn't take the world in a good place. And we're learning the same lesson, which is how in God's name, post-World War I, could Germany rearm itself and be a greater military power than Great Britain and France? What?
Combined.
Yeah, combined. Are you crazy? And so if it isn't peace through strength, then it's nothing. Then it's nothing, and we're going through that again. NATO.
Yeah, if history doesn't teach you anything, history should teach you one thing, that peace through strength is the only means. It's the only way it works.
Right. Right.
You can't attain peace through peace. It has never worked in recorded history.
Ever.
Peace. What makes you think it's going to work now?
Peace through personality.
Oh, yeah, a better plan.
Peace through personality. And intellectual thought doesn't happen. Doesn't happen.
Personality gets your foot in the door. You know, that's the only thing it does. So, yeah, that's just it. I am going to watch that movie. I want to go see it.
Yeah, I had read a review of it or seen a review that I didn't go looking for it. Just kind of, I don't know how it popped into my phone or popped out onto my computer that said, you know, what an outstanding movie it was. And
Churchill's an interesting read. You read about his life, you know, and he was a very, different type of leader. I mean, make no mistake about it. When we say leader, Churchill was the leader. He wasn't, you know, an elected official. He wasn't a boss. He wasn't a manager. He was plain Jane. He walked the walk. He was the guy.
And the difference is, the leader says is a yes and no person, right? And there's other people that make things work. The leader is a person at the end of the day who says yes, do this, no, do this. Okay.
Right.
And there's a lot of other people can make things work and have input into policy, but great leaders are the people that say yes or no.
Look at the big three and you rank them of the Allied powers, Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin. You rank those guys in the aspect of who's the better leader. Churchill by far is number one. Close on his heels is Stalin. A leader. He was a committee guy. Remember, he's the guy. He didn't want this. This was laying on his doorstep. You know, he's praised as being a leader. He wasn't really a leader.
Yeah, you know, Mike. I haven't read enough about.
And those other two guys.
I haven't read enough
about. Those
two guys
knew that he was the weak. He was the weak link.
You know,
so we're just posturing
again. It's interesting because Churchill and Stalin faced a lot of the same, you know, they faced what was going to be the elimination of their military and their nations being destroyed or the fate of their nation unknown, as, you know, in, you know, Germany's invasion of Russia, you know, they were on the outskirts of Moscow. I mean, literally looking at Moscow is where the German army was, overextended, whatnot. But you know, that was you were swimming in the deep end. All three of them. And you look at the American challenge is this global conflict that we're fighting in the Pacific and on the Atlantic and in Europe. What the hell, man? How do you balance industrial power, all the things that we're trying to, manpower? How do you do this? And then what does the world look like after that? How do we shape it? I mean, think of the problems. I mean, it must have been interesting. I'd love, too bad they don't have audio recordings of what happened in Yalta when, you know, the three of them met and those conferences. It would be, it would be absolutely riveting to know what they discussed and the order they discussed it and sidebar discussions and things like that. Very, very huge times.
Oh yeah.
Huge times. Have you read much about Churchill?
I did a long time ago. I still have a bunch of his books. You know, and I have his biography, so I've read all that stuff.
Interesting.
But I was a big World War II history buff guy. Reading about it.
Yeah, I've never read that much about Churchill as a leader. And the guys I know that have read about him have told me, hey, you gotta read either this book or you gotta read about him because he's unbelievable. First of all, he's a unique character in terms of he wasn't like most politicians. And so I always find that interesting that in the midst of this, you know, that very, life, you know, lived in the public, in the public view that, somehow or other you're okay still being yourself. And he certainly was that. So I find him a kind of a unique read. And I should probably put something on my list
There's a lot of books about him.
What would you recommend?
I'd read his autobiography. And then when I get home, I'll text you the name of the book that I have at the house that talks about him.
All right, hold on.
There's a ton of books.
Okay. All right, send me one and we'll talk about it. I got a couple gun questions for you. Mac, when you get a chance, could you ask the gunner this? My family got me a Glock for Christmas, the M19 variant. I believe Mike has talked about it. I have no experience with it. Are there places I can go that can teach me about this weapon? Do I need that kind of instruction? Should I simply go to the range and start shooting it? What would the gunner say about that? I'm sure a lot of people are in this kind of situation.
I'm a big fan of if you're going to learn something, learn it right. Because the last thing you want to build is training scars. Training scars are simply something that you're not doing correctly, but you do it over and over, and now it becomes muscle memory. It becomes this is the way it is. So if you start correctly, you know, again, pick something, driving, reading, you know, we all learn how to read a book at a very young age correctly, you know, or do things, math problems correctly. So reading a book would be shooting a gun would be no different than the fact that if you're going to do something, you want to do it right. And there's no limitations of what you should do. I mean, you can, one of the great things that if you ever go to a gun show, you look up and they do Glock armor courses. And that way you learn about everything about the Glock. You learn about how to take it apart, learn how to, what makes it tick, everything. You know, and most people will tell me, well, I'm just an average shooter, why would I know that? Well, if someone would have offered you a course back when you started out driving on how to maintain an automobile and do everything, would you have accepted that too? Well, yeah, obviously. You learn that through the OGT or through time, trial and error. And you may not be doing it right anyway, but if you're at 16 and you're doing your license and then they're offering your course in driver's ed of, you know, how to maintain by a master mechanic to do everything, you'd be a much better driver. You'd be, you know, more information. Knowledge is power. So, yeah, I would do some research, find out some people, because there are some bad instructors out there just like everywhere else. Look around, find out through reviews or other people's comments. You know, just because, and also remember, just because he's a police officer doesn't make him a gun expert. you know, so, you know, I was here. So the guy who taught me was a police officer. I mean, that guy practices, you know, a normal cop, you know, qualifies twice a year, 5 hours at a time or whatever. You know, name something that you think you're professional at that you practice 10 hours a year at. There is nothing. So it really comes down to just doing your homework, finding the right application that would suit you, and then go from there.
So taking a class is a good way to learn that, and maybe point you in ways that you might not even expected that your interest would take you and your shooting would take you.
Right.
Well, interesting. All right, here's another one. This is a safety question. Hey, Mac, I have trigger guards on all my rifles in my home. Don't have one on my pistol as I use it for security. I'm curious, how does the gunner store his guns? Mike?
Well, good, how are you? I store my guns a little differently, so most of my guns are in the safe.
Okay.
So they're out of touch, or they're out of the touch of greedy little hands that need to get their hands on them. But a lot of times, I have guns that are in the house that are not loaded. The ammunition's not too far away, but they're in readily accessible areas, but away from people. If they were to come to my house, you know, in the living room, they're in private areas. They're in my bedroom, they're in my closet. They're not in open sight. You can't see them. You got to know what you're looking for. So, you know, I always tell people, look at your area. If you got small kids in your house, lock every gun up.
And when you say lock, how do you mean? Trigger lock?
Trigger lock is fine. Small safe, you know, a case, a barrel lock, you know, something, anything that would render the weapon inaccessible to your hands that you don't want touching it.
Got it. What about, how do you store, how/where do you store ammunition?
The ammunition is stored in the garage.
All right. Is that under lock and key as well?
Some of it. Most of it's on like a shelf, like a metal shelving system. And I store everything in there.
Got it. But just so people know, your daughter is 21? 20?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mike does not have little kids roaming around his house.
No. And she knows.
Right.
She knows that if I ever caught her touching the gun without asking, she'd be in big trouble.
What about, is she a good shot?
Yeah, she is. She respects them. She knows the safety rules. We've been ingrained in her, you know, since she was a little kid. So she knows what to do when she comes across, you know, a gun that would be exposed. She would render it safe, you know, and then throw it away. You know, but she never had that. She never had to do that because it's never been
right,
an issue in her house.
Right. All right, man. Anything else you want to report about your weekend? I'm trying to think. What else did I do in my weekend? I cleaned my grill. I did that. And that's big football game tonight. Who do you like? Alabama or Georgia?
You know, I'm not a big – I can't get around the fact that Georgia or Alabama didn't win their conference. So, I can't get around Alabama.
So, Georgia
is my pull on tonight.
All right. All right, man. Well, you sound better.
Yeah. Like you said, my voice, if I get rid of this dry cough, be fine.
One more email. Hey, Mac, does the gunner have migraine issues when he has other maladies? So when you get sick, does it trigger
migraines?
If
I get sinus, yeah, I get, if like in the beginning when I had sinus issues with this pneumonia, the sinus pressure, oh, it kicked my butt, man, so bad.
Interesting.
So yeah, I was being really extra careful not to get, you know, triggered by a migraine headache.
All right, you're going to send me a link to a book, to a Churchill book, and I'm going to send you this.
Yep.
I'm going to send you this opinion piece called "Make Iran Great Again," which I know you'll enjoy. So anyway, well, first of all, good to hear your voice. My family can rest assured now that you're okay.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so to all Gunners fans up in Sacramento, relax. Okay, he's fine. All right, man.
I know it killed you too.
You have no idea. You say you know?
Right.
You don't even have it. You're not even close. You have no idea.
Right.
All right, man. Take it easy. Thanks.
Okay, I'll talk to you.
Michael Musselman here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So, one, good to hear his voice. Too long between here. Yeah, and he goes right from that to talking Churchill. Yeah, I think Mike got imbued with some of that by being stationed in the UK and being around their history, and which is huge, long history. Ours is big, short history. Great Britain, big, long history. So we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Monday. That's right. Chris Woodbridge's going to join us tomorrow. Yeah. Woody. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with a serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. BattleMug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it on a Monday. My thanks to Alex Hollings for coming on, talking fitness with us. Old Man Fitness. I'll read you a funny email on our way out the door. Mac. The people that wear skimpy outfits to gyms absolutely deserve to be stared at. First of all, it's what they want. Second of all, if they have the bodies to wear them, normally it's not a bad view. But I think Alex saying don't stare at them means don't linger. You certainly have every right to look. It is kind of why they wore it. But out and out staring? Come on. You know, I agree with that. I'm not talking about out and out staring. But somebody rolls in front of you like that. It's like going to the beach. You're not going to stare at somebody in a bikini? Come on. What does the world come to? It was just my choice of clothing. Oh, okay. No problem. But yeah, it's a interesting discussion about fitness and goals and Alex figuring it out as he enters a new phase of his life. Middle age with kids. They have demands on your times. Your priorities? Probably not at the top of the list anymore. Yep. They're probably not even second, third, fourth, or fifth. Yeah. So you have that going for you. Have a great one. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll talk about what's new in the Marine Corps Gazette this year. And now I'm kind of interested in Churchill. And maybe what we'll do is we'll get somebody who's a Churchill biographer. And we'll go ahead and get them on the program and get the footnotes of that very, very complex story. So Have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow. Chris Woodbridge will join us. We'll talk about the Gazette. See if he's seen that movie. On a Monday, All Marine Radio, over and out.